Spotlight You Live on the Arms Room Show with Glenn.
And Drew.
And finally, Facebook is up and running. One of these days, we might be on time again.
Maybe. Actually, very soon, probably.
Probably pretty damn soon. We are, we're going to be moving again.
Again.
Hopefully this time for a long time.
Into our own place again.
Back into our own place. Yeah, so, oh man, hopefully this week.
Yeah.
So either next week's show or the week after, we will be in our back in our own place again, and not using anyone else's building anymore. It's just not fun. We don't like it. It's way better to have our own place. We've had our own place previously for so long. We got used to it.
But now it's going to be on our side of town, so it's going
to
be nice.
It's also going to be close to our house, which is nice.
Yeah.
And the studio is going to be better foamed out, so it'll be a little more audio efficient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'll be good. It'll be good. We're excited. We're actually new classroom.
Yeah.
New studio, new office, all kinds of good stuff. So we're pretty excited.
Which has a octopus on our wall, which is pretty cool.
We already have a pre-painted octopus on the wall.
I think we should leave it, not a shark.
I think it's awesome. Awesome. Is the video up on your end?
Yeah.
Okay. As usual, mine is telling me there's no video, so whatever.
No, it's on.
Oh. Yeah. Hopefully better Wi-Fi, because we have a serious problem here on our freaking Wi-Fi.
So. Yeah, we have a lot of serious problems with our
So coming from the AR500 Armor Studio, maybe for the last time, or maybe the second to last time.
Maybe.
But definitely no more than one more time.
Yeah. Yeah. We get the keys hopefully today.
Today or tomorrow.
Today or tomorrow.
Yeah. So we're excited.
Yeah.
It'd be nice. Good to be back in what we want to do. Gonna have a classroom capable of teaching some room structural movement type concepts in. Gonna teach some low light stuff in this new classroom. It's nice and big.
Our medical classes will medical be back classes, to our office.
Some of them are gonna move there. We're excited.
Yeah, we're very excited
to be back to our own place.
Yeah.
So there's that. All right. So what else? Patrons. Thank you so much for being patrons. Got a message because we've been asking you patrons, hey, why don't you freaking tell us what you're not getting instead of being silent as death, like all you guys never say shit. First of all, your show requests are listened to and recognized and utilized. So if you want your show idea to be a show, just send it to us. Info at trainingaz.com or drop it on a message on Patreon or whatever social media. That's all fine. But we actually had a patron say, hey, I'm not getting my monthly drill. So here's what's going on with the monthly drill. Funny story. We're not fucking doing them. And here's why. Because we started doing them and no one gave a shit. So we're happy to start doing them. If you're missing out too, I figure if there's one patron asking, then there's probably more patrons not asking, right?
Yeah.
So if you're interested in doing it, in us going back and doing monthly drills, then let us know.
Yeah.
And we'll happily start doing that and sending them over. So, but you got to send us messages, right? You have to communicate with us so that we know. It was kind of like we were doing the giveaways. Nobody, like we were giving away some pretty amazing stuff. And we actually have some stuff that we're holding on to right now to give away.
Yeah,
if we can get some more involvement.
I wanted to bring that back. I liked doing the giveaways. I thought that was fun.
And I'm up for it. We just want to see more involvement, you know?
Yeah.
So we got to get more patrons. So if you're listening to the show and you like the show, tell other people about the show. Right? Share it with the people that you know in your life who like this kind of stuff or who could use this kind of information, because that's going to grow the show. And the more we grow the show, the more likely we are to go back to giveaways and things like that. You know, COVID hasn't really hammered independence training too much, but it has hammered the Arms Room Show.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of problems with access to our studio. We've had issues with all kinds of related things, and it's hammered our freaking patrons.
It has.
You know, we lost a lot of patrons because of it. And it's like if we lose too many patrons, we can't afford to do the show. So for you guys who aren't patrons, the least expensive is $1 a month. For fuck's sake, it's $1, right? The most expensive is $10 a month. Like if you're listening to our show, that means you're paying for internet and have a computer or a phone or whatever. You can probably afford $10 a month. And if you can't, like you legitimately can't, then $5 a month. And if you can't, then $1 a month. Like, we don't go on the show and talk about that much. I think this is maybe the first time I've ever actually talked about it in all the years of the show. So just understand that if we can't make the show pay for itself, we do have costs for it, then we can't do the show. And we sure as hell can't do giveaways. So if you guys are interested and you're listening, you like the show, like, if you can jump on and be a patron, it really helps us out and you'll get some extra stuff. All right, on to other things. We had a great weekend of training. Beautiful Flagstaff, Arizona weather.
Amazing.
High of 80, mostly overcast. Kick-ass freaking rainstorm on one of the days.
Let's not forget the elephant in the room here, that Garrett stayed by himself all day long.
Garrett had a whole
weekend. Not burning the house down.
The dogs were both alive and, yeah.
Well-fed.
And,
yeah,
and well,
I'm sure
and well fed, well fed. So you guys might have noticed, and my neglect to introduce him because he's just sitting over there. I'm surprised he's not on his phone.
I know.
Garrett, my oldest son, who's been on the show before, talking about a couple things, but it has been a while.
It's been a while.
So he's going to join us today to talk to us or talk with us about, you know, the concept of, it's not all about tourniquets. It's a show of the topic of the show, and Garrett's got some introspective on that too. Because he's a kid who's grown up around all this stuff, and he's one of the few kids I know that carries his own trauma kit and has used it. But we're going to talk about the application of using medical skills and supplies and whether or not tourniquets were used in the various capacities that Garrett's had to use them. But before we get to that, advanced classes are what we taught this weekend. Advanced. I'm going to use air quotes, advanced. All right. One of my favorite things to say in the beginning of the advanced classes is, like, we call it advanced to get you to enroll. All right, now that you're already here, let's talk about what advanced is. There's no advanced skills, guys. There's no secret shit we're keeping from people. We're not like, oh, we're this fast or this accurate because we do this magical thing and we're going to teach you on day 5 after you buy the first 4 days of training. Like, that's some, I've seen training organizations sell shit like that. That's certainly not who we are. There is no magical sauce other than the fundamentals, practiced and practiced and analyzed and broken down and revisited and then practiced some more and then videoed and then looked at from different angles and then saw some professional instruction and then gone out and practiced what you learned and take some notes and struggling through working on the fundamentals in the sun and in the snow and in the wind and in the rain and making sure they all work and then applying them as extremely as you can and then trying to figure out what you can't do and then seeking professional instruction on that and then just repeating that whole process. That's the secret sauce, man. You want to know how we got good? Because we didn't take 1 day's worth of training. We didn't take a 1 day training class and then go, okay, I guess we're good now. We're trained, right? Mm-hmm. And I'll practice, you know, whenever, every now and then maybe. That's not how we, and by we, I mean like the, I'll say quote unquote professional shooters in the industry. Like, we didn't get good at what we do because we took a 1 day class or a 2 day class or a 5 day class. We've been doing this shit for years, man. And we've struggled through the failure points. You think we haven't failed? You think we haven't been embarrassed in front of our peers? You think we haven't made stupid mistakes in front of people? You think instructors don't do dumb things in front of students sometimes or make mistakes? You think we all just win every competition we go to? No freaking chance, man. You know, there's like, we're okay with going out and putting ourselves out there to fail and to fight and to learn and to improve. That's how we got this way. So what's an advanced class? What it should be is an extreme application of the fundamentals. That's what it should be, and that's what we teach. And it was an extreme application of the fundamentals, and it was awesome. We had some really great classes. We also did our ladies AR-15-101 class, sold out, tons of fun.
There was a ton of fun.
20 ladies out there rocking ARs. By the end, by the beginning, there were some ladies who had never fired a gun before. Mm-hmm. There were some ladies who had never fired an AR-15 before. There were some who owned one but hadn't really shot it before. There were some who were fairly proficient with it. We had a good mix. And by the end, everybody moving and shooting and dueling with each other and just having a damn great time. So tons of freaking fun for that class. Another one of those classes coming up September 15th, a Tuesday evening. So if you're in the Phoenix area, you're a lady or you're a guy with a lady in your life and you want her to get used to an AR-15, even if she's never touched one before in her life.
Or she's even afraid of them.
Or she's afraid of them. We had a couple ladies who showed up on Friday who were not totally excited but wanted to not be afraid anymore.
Yeah.
And by the end, they were moving and shooting along with everybody else. So
yeah. It was great.
Tons of freaking fun. So many more classes coming up, and more classes going to be getting posted over the next couple of weeks as we navigate facility closures and range closures. We're rescheduling some stuff and moving things around. And we're doing our best, as we've been doing, it seems like, all damn year, trying to navigate this freaking COVID shit, so.
Yeah, I'm ready for it to be over.
Me too. Definitely me too. Hashtag me too. I finally get to use it. Me too. I'm done with COVID and your stupid fucking masks. Hashtag me too. On that note, I want to give a little personal note here about masks.
Oh, God.
Now, I'm not going to rant about masks, so relax. I got accused recently. Okay, let me back up. One of the things that Drew and I have been discussing a lot lately, especially as we talk to other instructors and other people in the industry, is the powerful effect that we can have on people, right? I mean, a lot of people listen to this show, and a lot of people come through our training programs, and a lot of people follow us on social media. We have a certain capability to affect people, and we know that. We do not take it lightly.
Right.
I am dead fucking serious about my capability in my job to affect people's lives. When you had a phone call or a sit down or an email with someone who is alive or has saved someone else's life because of something that they learned through the organization you built, that'll change your religion, man. It really makes you think about things very differently. It makes you think really carefully about the things that you say, the responsibility that you have as an educator to put the right information into people's minds. I don't just say things off the cuff, or I try not to. Sometimes it happens in classes because I'm a human being and I get relaxed and I say something off the cuff. And sometimes I've said some shit I've had to take back in a class. That's no shit has happened. Because I'm like, oh, don't take that one to the bank. Like, that was just an offhanded comment from regular guy Glenn, not your instructor Glenn. I just made a comment about something. Please don't think that that's reflective of how I would handle a situation like this. I just made a comment, right? So we have to take what we do incredibly seriously. There's a lot of people in this industry who don't. They don't take it seriously. They're like, I just want to pack a class full of people. I want to show them some cool guy shit because once upon a time I was a cool guy, sort of. And mostly I'm alive because someone else kept me that way, but that's a whole other fucking discussion. And then, you know, cool. Everyone came, they saw, they listened to some war stories, and boom, they're out the door. They got our patch and we're ready for the next freaking crew. And that's how some educational, or I would say training organizations, look at their thing. They do not take it seriously. The very first time I ever had a student call me and say, I'm alive because of something that I learned from your organization, it completely changed the way I looked at my job. 100% changed it. So with that in mind, I don't take it lightly that what I say or do in my life might influence people. So like with masks, we've alluded to what we do and don't do, right? And we've said what we do and don't do a little bit. I got accused recently by an associate of not taking my job seriously and being dangerous with information because apparently somewhere on social media, which I don't remember, I had said something about like maybe not wearing a mask, or you shouldn't wear a mask or something like that. Look, I don't fucking care if you're wearing a mask. That's your thing. I don't want to get into that on the show. But, and some people have to. They have to keep their jobs. I want you to think long and hard about that for a second. But that's fine, right? To get my go to my doctor's appointment, I have to wear a mask. Have to wear a mask. Okay, fine.
I didn't wear one in Costco the other day.
When we go shopping or whatever, we'll do what we want to do. All right, that's what we want to do. All right.
No one said anything to
me. I don't take it lightly that what we say doesn't have an effect on people, but I am also entitled to my own opinion, so I'll say this about the masks. If you're wearing a mask or not wearing a mask, so be it. You have your reasons and I have mine. That's fine. But take a look around at what is going on, and take a look around at how this all came to be, and take a look around at what else is happening right now in line with this.
No one cares about a Wayfair scandal.
No one cares about that.
Possibly and probably being sold in cabinets.
No one cares about the fact that the judge who's supposed to be prosecuting the Epstein case just got attacked this weekend.
Her son got murdered, her husband got shot, critically wounded. No one cares about that.
Yeah, no, who even cares?
Mysterious gunman, yeah. Like a week after taking the application.
I've casually mentioned the Wayfair scandal to students in classes.
Nobody knows.
And there's some people who literally don't even know about it.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, at the very least, no one cares.
I watched a guy on a motorcycle the other day drive past me on the freeway with no helmet but a mask on.
It's the armor of God, man. It makes you righteous and it protects you from all evil.
It's like, right? Just think about that for a minute, right? Like, however you want to do it is fine. It's pretty obvious what my opinion is on this.
On the other hand, we've all had it.
No, it's not even about that. Nope. It's not even about that to me. To me, I don't even give a fuck about that.
But it's like...
It doesn't even matter.
That's why I'm okay with not wearing it, because...
But who can say who has had it and who hasn't? The majority of the population probably has had it.
Probably.
And have they gone through the process yet of building up the antibodies appropriate to being able to not be contagious? I don't know. So it's better safe than sorry, right? That's what people tell me.
I still love all the little... you know, where people go in to get tested, and you have to like register to get in, and then they leave or whatever. Yeah.
And then they get the results back that it's positive.
So my thing is,
and no one cares about that.
Nobody cares about that.
So if everybody's testing positive, okay. So from their mindset, if everybody's testing positive, everybody's already had it. So why are we still fucking wearing?
Because they need that. They need those case numbers to be really high. Because in order to continue to keep people afraid, they need these test numbers. They need these results high. Look how many people are still getting it. Look, COVID is real.
What happens when they run out of people that everybody's tested positive?
I don't know. They'll probably test positive dead people like the fucking Democrats do in voting.
They already do.
So here's the thing, man. There's a lot of proof and counterproof on both sides. People say this is the proof for masks, and then other people say this is the proof against it. And on we go.
Yeah.
I'll say...
I want to say this because I don't want to turn the show into the mask thing. Yeah. Okay? Here's what I will say to end the mask thing on the show, because there's other things we want to talk about. Do or don't. It's your choice. Resist tyranny. Be intelligent.
That's too much to ask.
Be intelligent and make your own choice. This associate of mine who, you know, accused me of being irresponsible, I respect their decision to do what they want to do. It's always odd to me how when I want to enact my liberty, I'm irresponsible or I'm crazy. This isn't just masks. Think about the people who fight back against us for all the things that we exercise. Guns. Well, how many children have to die before you'll believe that it's okay to have some gun control? All the fucking kids. All of them. Because I don't believe in your stupid gun control. Because you can't give me one single incident where your gun control has worked. Prove to me that what you want me to do works. Don't sell me on the emotion of it working. Don't sell me on the hypothesis of it working. Don't try to sell me, or don't try to guilt me or shame me into making, I don't guilt people or shame them into doing what I want them to do. I want people to carry guns. I don't guilt people or shame them into doing it. It's your fucking choice. If you don't want to do it, don't do it. Understand the potential consequences of not doing it. Understand the potential consequences of doing it. I'm not trying to guilt or shame anyone into it. I don't care what their choices are. They're enacting their personal liberty, and I'm going to enact mine. And if you want to force something on me, fine. Prove to me that it works. Prove to me. I don't have to prove to you that something you want me to do doesn't work. Fuck you if that's the way you think. And the next person who seriously tries to equate wearing a mask in the it's better safe than sorry thing to carrying a gun, I'm gonna rip your dick off and send it to your fucking mom. I am so goddamn tired of hearing that kind of bullshit. No, the government doesn't shame me into carrying a gun. No one shames
or
me
fines
into
you.
Carrying. I don't get fined for not carrying a gun.
Or go to jail.
A place won't not do business with me because I'm not carrying a gun. I'm not gonna get the law enforcement called on me for not carrying a gun. So no. Those two things aren't even the same. And if you're stupid enough that you can't make that own connection, you ought to think about maybe getting off this planet. Because you might not be smart enough for it.
The other thing is when people, when you have a conversation.
I hope I've offended a lot of people.
When you have a conversation with somebody and you say, yes, I can see your point of view, but then that other person just gets pissed off and argues with you when you're like, I see your point of view. Stop trying to argue with me that I don't see your point of view.
Yeah.
And then he gets angry at you because he's upset because you won't do what he's telling you to do. There's a problem.
Does it sound like someone we know?
No.
No? Not at all?
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
I don't get upset. I just tell you you're wrong.
Okay. Well, to end the whole mask discussion and move on to the next topic as you wanted.
Like you wanted.
Uh-huh. Are you done with your 20-minute rant?
Wasn't even 20 minutes. It was like 18.
It says 20.
Gotcha.
Whatever. Look, if you don't like the show, you can fucking turn it off.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Not you. Not you. The listener. And if you have, like, if you have solid evidence that, like, this shit works. And I don't want hypothesis or scary emotional bullshit. If you have a solid evidence, I am always open. Just like I said earlier about changing my mind, learning, improving. I am always open. If I find out I'm wrong, I'll say I'm wrong. I got no problem saying I'm wrong. I got no problem admitting to someone I've made a mistake. I got no problem changing my ways if I feel like it's going to actually be beneficial. So if you are listening and you have just like, oh my God, rock solid evidence that doing what the government tells me to do is going to end in the benefit of my health, future, and fortune for me, my family, and the people I love, send it on over. You know how to get a hold of us. I'm happy to read it. And if I'm wrong, I will admit that I'm wrong. And I will fall in line and comply and get on boxcars or whatever it is you want me to do. But you got to be able to prove it. Because historically, you know, like history and like reading and shit, this doesn't end well, people. Straight mindless compliance, do it or else, doesn't end well. If you don't do this, we'll fine your business. If you don't do this, we'll shut you down. If you don't do this, we'll arrest you. If you don't do this, we'll come at you. That kind of stuff doesn't end well historically. Like, maybe pick up a history book and check it out.
Well, no, because they're trying to take all that away. Remember all the new kids are like, oh, we need to erase history.
It's just destroying statues and burning down libraries. No. I mean, just destruction.
And changing history books.
They want
changing
the, history
books altering education.
They want the books gone.
It's not real China at all.
All right, don't buy your wives guns. Let's change the topic.
Don't buy your wives.
Don't buy your wives or your girlfriend, your mom, your sister, or anybody else.
Whoa, you just bought me a gun.
That's a little different.
Oh, okay.
If you, here's why it's different.
The rules don't apply.
No. Here's why it's different. If your significant other doesn't know what they want, don't buy them something. We bought Drew a gun because she knew exactly what she wanted, so we just went and bought what she wanted. Like, that's a totally different freaking story. But if you don't know or your wife doesn't know, don't think you're going to get it right. We see this problem. We saw it kind of again this weekend a little bit. And we see this problem a lot where a lady doesn't necessarily know what she needs. And maybe or maybe not, a husband or significant other has an influence on that decision. But they may not really know either. And then what tends to happen is the lady ends up with something she doesn't like. Now, if you're just made of money, that may not be a problem for you because you're like, whatever, we'll just get some more shit then. We'll just buy more guns. And that's awesome, right? But if you're not made of money and buying a gun is a big purchase and a big significance for you, then, you know, maybe make a more educated decision, like seek training. Come to an organization like ours, and there's plenty more like ours around the country that offers you the opportunity to try some different guns out. We've had people come through all levels of classes and use our guns, from precision rifle to basic handgun and everything in between. People have used our firearms to go through a program so that they can make a good purchasing decision afterwards. So just something to think about, man. It is a real problem that we see. If you're buying something for someone and they don't just know exactly what they want, don't get it for them because that might not turn out the way you want it to.
Second opinions, professional opinions, they save the home life.
Yeah, they do.
Well, not only that, just
save the money.
Testing it out is huge. Shooting it before you buy it.
Go rent them. I mean, so many indoor ranges all over the country Go there, drop a couple $100 on rent. I know it's a couple $100, but go drop a couple $100 or less on renting a handful of different guns and making a good choice. You'll save in the long run.
Yeah, I went through 5 handguns before I settled on the Shield and the 19.
Yeah.
5 different carry options that I carried for lengthy amount of time, but I was too ignorant to know what was working and what wasn't. Until I got training. Weird.
Someone just sent me a link. One of the listeners just sent me this.
Ooh.
Kentucky couple fit with ankle monitors and placed on house arrest for refusing to sign quarantine documents.
Oh, gosh.
A Kentucky couple was fitted with ankle monitors and placed on house arrest after the wife tested positive for coronavirus but refused to sign self-quarantine documents. Elizabeth Linscott said she got tested for COVID-19 as a precaution because she's planning to visit her parents in Michigan. She received a positive result but showed no symptoms. They asked her to sign documents. She said, go fuck yourself. Because of how they were worded, she says. I'm not going to read the whole articles. It's pretty long. And they end up with freaking ankle monitors.
Someone exercise there.
You will comply. I mean, come on, guys.
You threw him back on it. No, I'm getting off.
Not me.
I'm done.
No, not
I'm
you.
Done. All right. All right. Redwire Gear moment brought to you today by redwiregear.com. John still MIA
he's
now.
He's still fired. We saw him last night. But he's
we
still
did
fired.
See him last night. He may come back in August. We don't know because he's got all this other shit's changing with the freaking orders and whatever. But anyways, we still love him and Redwire Gear is still important to us. So Redwire Gear moment is this. Make sure that your equipment is ready for all weather conditions. Make sure that your equipment's not going to seize up if it gets a little dirty, a little sandy. Make sure it's not going to get rusty if it gets a little wet. You know, make sure that it's properly maintained after it gets exposed to a lot of environmental conditions. Maintenance on your equipment is something that Redwire Gear Moment has talked about before, but primarily this time I want to talk about nasty weather. You know, here in Arizona, we got the monsoons coming up. Your gear's going to get wet. Hopefully we get some monsoons coming up. Your gear's going to get wet. Your carry gun might get wet. Your ammo might get wet. Your knife, your freaking nunchucks, whatever it is you carry. Your med kit all might get wet if you get caught in a rainstorm or you're out there outside when it happens. Make sure you maintain it afterwards. Don't let it get nasty. Don't let it decrease your capacity to handle yourself or to use that equipment for what it's intended to do by not properly maintaining it after it's been exposed to nasty weather conditions. So Redwire Gear Moment brought to you by redwiregear.com. Today's topic, it's not just tourniquets. So here's a couple of things I want to talk about, and I want to ask Garrett some questions because of his exposure to all this information over the years. The first thing, what kind of started this was I found myself in a discussion. We posted a photo online on social media about it's not all about tourniquets, and it was about wound packing and bandaging and how that's realistically going to happen more than tourniquet application for the average person. And a couple of people had jumped on there who weren't even our students and been like, hey, this is awesome. It's always good to see people promoting training that just goes beyond tourniquets. A lot of people, in fact, I was literally just looking at another local organization that wants to start teaching medical classes. A lot of people want to teach medical classes from a military perspective. Mm-hmm. They want to teach it from a TCCC perspective. They want to teach it from a law enforcement perspective because that is the limitation on the scope of their experience. Tourniquets are super duper important when you're wearing body armor and your limbs are flailing about outside of body armor. That's why you see military and law enforcement should be having multiple tourniquets on them or nearby because body armor doesn't protect our limbs and tourniquets only work on limbs. A tourniquet, however, is a hammer. It drives nails. But it doesn't do anything else particularly well, right? So what we're looking for in a medical toolbox is more than just one tool. And certainly if we're going to carry a tool, we want it to be multifunction.
Yeah.
So to preface all this, I'll say this, and this is what I tell people, most of the time in classes or who ask. If I had to choose a tourniquet, a good CAT tourniquet, or a soft T-wide, or a TMT, if I didn't just list it, it's because it's a fucking piece of garbage and you probably shouldn't be using it. Got it? Let's move on. One of those three items is about $35 or so. You might find it for a little bit less. But most stores you go to, we're going to say it's $35. If you're buying it for more than that, you suck at shopping. $35 is about what it ought to be. On one hand. On the other hand, I could have a really good Israeli bandage for like $4 or $5 or less. The Wound Stop variations of those bandages or the Dynarex variations of those bandages, I think, are like $3. And a roll of gauze. Hopefully more than one. You're always going to need more gauze. Maybe two rolls of gauze, okay? At $1 a piece. So now we're at like, let's say $6, okay? On one hand, I have a $35 piece of equipment that's usable for a thing. Extremity hemorrhage, that's it. And yeah, you can fashion it. Like one time I used a tourniquet to hold a camera on a wood post, right? So you can use them for all kinds of crazy.
It is still a strap.
Yeah, it's still basically a strap.
Yeah.
You can use it to hold other things in place. In training, we'll see people use tourniquets to hold splints in place and all that kind of stuff. And they work, right? It's a strap, like Garrett said. But really what it's good for is a thing. The bandage and a couple rolls of gauze, however, that's good for everything from a minor wound all the way up to wound packing, all the way up to the same catastrophic hemorrhage that you use a tourniquet for. You can use gauze and bandage for. And it's more likely that you're going to need gauze and bandage over tourniquet. You know, most of the time, if I'm wearing pants, today I'm in shorts. So when I'm wearing pants, I have an ankle kit on. And that's 90% of the time I'm wearing pants. So if I have pants on, I have my ankle kit on. When I'm wearing shorts like this, and typically cargo shorts because I'm a nerd. And so I always carry a trauma kit. Like I've got a small trauma kit in my pocket right now. It doesn't have a tourniquet. It does have bandage and gauze. The tourniquet's too bulky for me to carry along with that. It's not that I couldn't throw it in the other pocket or carry it easily. I could find a way to carry it. But to me, it's not as important. With my ankle kit, I have gone through every single piece of equipment in there. The gloves, the blanket, the tape, the gauze, the chest seal. I've gone through the bandage, everything in that kit. Some of it multiple times. You know what I've never used in that kit? The tourniquet. The same soft T-wide I put in there when I first started wearing that kit almost 5 years ago is the same soft T-wide that's still in there. I mean, that's something to think about. In a civilian setting, how likely am I to need a tourniquet? Now, you should have one because if you need it, you need it real bad and you need it real fast. So definitely have a tourniquet, have it easily available, and be very proficient on using it. But it's not the most important element of your kit. And when I see people rolling around with only a tourniquet, it really makes me think about what their toolbox at home looks like. Like, you might need more than a tool. And you probably want a tool that's more of multifunction anyway. If you're going to carry only one tool, carry something that's multifunction, something I can do a lot with. That would be more important than just carrying a tourniquet. So that's a problem that we see, is moving from that I wear body armor mindset, and that's why a lot of these organizations are just tourniquets, 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 tourniquets.
Which are prepped incorrectly anyways.
Which a lot of them are prepped incorrectly anyways. But we move from that into the actual practical application of the tourniquet. To that point, Garrett, you've been carrying a trauma kit in your backpack to school and in your baseball bag for ball and your hiking bag for hunting and you know, camping and everything for
years now. I mean, years and years.
Pretty much as soon as you put a backpack, I was like, you got to carry your own shit, dude. Mm-hmm. You know? So, and that was pretty young.
Oh, yeah. That was like, what, 7 or 8?
Yeah, at least that. Yeah, I was like, hey, if you're going to be out here with me, here's a little backpack with some basic stuff in it. But, yeah, you don't get to get skate off easy, kid. I'm not carrying all your shit. You know what I mean? And that's an important lesson. So for those of you guys who think I'm insensitive, I don't fucking care what you think about my parenting. I create awesome children. Right? Go fuck yourself. Your kids are pussies.
And humble, too.
And humble. Right? Yeah. So that's the reality. My kids are going to rule your kids, so enjoy it.
That's a great way. That's a great way to get patrons.
Or parent better, and then our kids can rule together. How about that?
Okay, that's the added in part. Anyways.
I'm proud of my kids. So you've been carrying this med stuff for a long time. And you've had the experience to deal with some injuries away from me.
Yeah.
You know, when on your own, baseball and friends and hiking and stuff like that. What do you think the most used item out of all that? You get sports injuries, outdoor injuries, you've worked on some of the other kids, like all those different possibilities. And I mean, like our other kids.
Yeah.
All those different possibilities of injury types. What do you think the most used piece of equipment is?
Ace bandage and duct tape.
Ace bandage, duct tape. What do you think after that? What's the next most used piece of equipment?
After that, probably just like a regular wool or a roll of gauze.
Regular gauze?
Yeah.
After that?
After that, I mean...
Boo-boo stuff, probably?
Yeah. Sting cream.
Yeah.
Burn cream. Band-aids, basic stuff like that. After that, it's, you know, too little to even worry about.
Tourniquet usage?
Zero.
Zero times. But you're very proficient at using a tourniquet.
Uh-huh.
And you carry a tourniquet.
I do.
You carry a tourniquet everywhere you go, pretty much.
Everywhere.
But?
Never have to use it.
Never have to use it.
I've dealt with probably upwards of 10 leading into major injuries now, right? Some pretty serious bleeding. I've had to deal with a couple broken bones on, not myself, but friends, stuff like that, right? It's been easy shit. Just use Ace bandage, use a piece of gauze, use some duct tape. Duct tape is a lifesaver. If I could carry a whole roll and have it not be awkward, I would. But, yeah.
But no tourniquet. I think that's like, it's that kind of experience. And obviously we're talking about some anecdotal stuff. This is my experience, your experience.
Of course.
Right? Drew, what do you think, out of all the injuries you deal with, which has been outdoor injuries, running-related injuries, falls... I'm sure I was a hard time staying upright.
So it's not falls, really. It's not sometimes. Falls. It's upwards of 50% of the time. Right.
Animal injuries, kid injuries, driving accidents. You've responded to some vehicle accidents.
Yeah, I have.
Things like
motorcycle
that.
Motorcycle accidents.
What do you think, then, out of all, again, the variety of things, right? You're talking about vehicle accidents. You're talking about outdoor accidents. You're talking about athletic accidents, kid-related stuff, pet-related stuff. Number one piece of equipment you use.
Gauze.
Tape.
Band-aids. The little people.
Little stuff.
Yeah.
After that, what do you think it is? What's the next one called?
I mean, when I run and I fall, sometimes I have to pick the rocks out of my skin, so carrying tweezers is nice. Or even just putting duct tape on your arm and ripping it off to get the rocks out. That's fun. Other than that, I would say, I mean, creams. Putting creams on.
Antibiotic stuff. Burn creams.
Yeah. I mean, majority of the time, it's really cream, gauze, Ace bandage. I mean, yeah. I don't think I've ever used a tourniquet other than besides training.
So, almost the same stuff Garrett mentioned.
Yeah.
We had a pretty interesting injury on the range this weekend. Every now and then, I mean, if you're using steel targets, sooner or later someone's going to get hit with spall, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter the quality of the targets, the angle of the targets, the distance of the targets. Sooner or later someone gets hit. Now, most of the time, it's pretty minimal.
Oh, we used a staple gun that one time.
Yep.
We did.
But that's not very common. That was a very uncommon thing. But, like, there's... a high likelihood if you shoot steel targets, you're going to get hit. If you've ever been to a steel match or you ever been to a competition where there's lots of steel targets, you've been pegged by the little stuff, what I call the angry bees. You know what I mean? You get tagged by, like, oh, shit, you know what I mean? Maybe it cuts you a little, maybe you bleed a little. But usually it's not that bad.
If you're wearing a shirt, you'll be fine.
Most of the time, if it doesn't hit your open skin, you're going to be just fine. We had a good one yesterday. Mm-hmm. We had one that went straight through a T-shirt into the abdomen of a student. Under the skin.
And we'll put those photos on the arms room so people can see.
A nasty little subcutaneous deal. Where the guy's like, hey, I think I just got hit with some spall. And I was like, okay, because he knew he'd shot some steel before. I'm like, all right, let me take a look. And I'm like, okay.
Well,
he's like,
blacksmith.
He's like, it's not even really that big of a deal. I just wanted to let you know about it. And I go, let's go ahead and hand your rifle over to someone else. And we're going to go check this out back in the back. And he was like, you think it's bad? And I go, it's still in there. You know, so we go back. And, pull up, sanitize it. So I've got alcohol wipes and all that kind of stuff. Get the area all nice and clean. Was trying to pull it out with the tweezers. But, of course, when it comes off, it's kind of hot. So it kind of seared to the skin.
Yeah.
So I needed something to kind of hold everything in place. So I had to pull out my hemostats, open up the wound a little bit, get the tweezers in there, and really kind of rip it off the skin.
Oof.
He was solid as an oak tree. This guy didn't give a shit.
Yeah. He was a blacksmith. And
he was like, I've been burned worse than this before. I'm like, I'm sure you have, but this has got to fucking hurt, man. So I peeled it out. Flushed it out, irrigated as best as I could because it'd create a little pocket, you know. Yeah. And then used some antibiotic, and then just put a giant freaking Band-Aid on it, and then boom, he was back on the line shooting again, you know, mm-hmm. and he shot the rest of the day.
And then forgot it happened.
Yeah, I checked on him a couple times, and right toward the end of class, I'm like, hey, man, how's that thing feeling? Like, I kind of forgot about it, actually. It's no big deal. So dude's a hard ass. But anyways, the point is that all that we used on range, right? I mean, that was an impact-penetrating wound. No tourniquets. I needed basic tools, basic first aid tools. And what was interesting is that a couple of the students had come back. Well, he had come back, obviously, so he's one of them. And then another one of the students had come back to kind of see what was going on. And in our discussion afterwards, before he went back to the line, they were both like, we wouldn't have known what to do there. And this is basic first aid stuff. And they're like, not only would we have maybe not known what to do, but we don't even carry those tools. You know, they're like tweezers and hemostats and antibiotics and, you know, prep pads and big Band-Aids. Like, we don't even carry that shit on the range. And I'm like, well, maybe you should, you know, like maybe these are things you ought to put in a first aid kit that you're going to have on a range. They both had trauma kits though, with tourniquets. My point is not that tourniquets aren't important. They are, but
it's a limited variety of situations in which they're actually going to be used.
And so there's a lot of issues. So what are then some of the things that are more important than tourniquets? And I would say probably, if not in this exact order, damn close to this exact order. One is a good assessment, a good patient assessment. One of the number one things we see in both the real world and in training is people skipping steps in the March assessment, which I'll explain here in a second, but they skip steps in the March assessment, or they skip steps in the scene safety assessment, and someone gets hurt additionally, the patient is further injured, or a very serious injury is overlooked in light of something that is apparent but not as serious. We call that a gross or distracting wound. So bad assessment is a problem.
Mm-hmm. All right, so just to clarify, we're not finding pieces of equipment that are more important, arguably, or we are finding pieces of equipment along with skill sets and ways to actually deal with an injury.
Yes.
That are more
I think it's stop being so hyper-focused on a tourniquet, because I think there's a lot of hype about being pushing for stop the bleed and tourniquets, where people are really negligent on everything else as a whole. Just like, you know, here's the fight, and then here's the gunfight. Yeah. It's one of those things like, here's the medicine, here's the tourniquet. Mm. Like, we need to focus on everything.
Tourniquets are so limited. They're just such limited, like, application.
Yeah.
And, you know, because we see, like, guys come out to the range or whatever, they got tourniquets strapped on their gun stocks, they got tourniquets strapped on their plate carriers, they got, you know, a couple of them, they shove one in their pocket.
But where's their other med kit?
But you're like, where's the rest of the stuff that's actually way more applicable? Like, in Stop the Bleed, for example, Stop the Bleed also teaches wound packing.
Mm-hmm.
But more and more people, as I watch their Stop the Bleed programs get taught, are focusing real heavy on the tourniquet. They're not focusing on patient assessment. They're not focusing on scene safety. They're not focusing on wound packing as much as they are, let's see how fast we can get the tourniquet on. Let's see how efficient we can get the tourniquet on, which is all important to understand all those concepts, but not as important as understanding some of the other steps here.
Yeah.
So kind of sort of in order, step number one for us would be patient and scene assessment, right? Let's make sure that that's handled properly. The MARCH acronym is this: massive bleeding first, which could include the use of tourniquets, of course. Airway management, respirations, making sure that it's normal and even. Circulation, make sure that that's happening and handling all other wounds in circulation. And then lastly, hypothermia, which is maintaining body core temperature to treat and or prevent shock. So that is the MARCH acronym that we're using. Now, M, massive hemorrhage, is first. So if there is catastrophic hemorrhage and it's on the extremities, arms and legs, then yes, tourniquets are appropriate. But shy of that, you're going to need wound packing. And if all you have is a tourniquet, you ain't packing shit. People are like, well, you can use a sock, or you can improvise. And it's like, yes. That's you can like, always improvise when you have failed the plan.
And please don't use tampons to wound pack.
Yes. Stop. Stop with the stupid tampon shit. All right? So
what if I carry two boxes of tampons? Yeah.
Just so you guys all know, it doesn't stop the bleed. The bleed is still going on.
And
it
also
just doesn't allow it coming out.
The lady is not catastrophically hemorrhaging with arterial pressure. If she is, it's more than a menstrual cycle, all right?
Hey, I already had that happen.
So you're not catastrophically freaking hemorrhaging from there, all right? Also, if you're curious, just cut a tampon open. It's usually a 4x4 piece of gauze.
Yeah.
There's been a variety of organizations that have already done this and posted the photos all over social media. It's a 4x4 piece of gauze, and then they'll roll out a 12-foot normal piece of gauze and compare the two. And it's just, I mean, when you see them in size comparison,
it's not even funny.
It's a fucking joke. Yeah. You know, 12 feet compared to 4 inches, you're just like, holy shit, that's a lot of gauze. And they're basically packed in almost the same size of container. At least, like, yeah, you don't want tampon, you definitely want the gauze. Right?
Yeah.
So that's an important part of this, yes. So the MARCH acronym is critical here. Second to that, personally, I would go for, depending on your operational environment or where you're going to be, I would say either airway management, learning how to properly open an airway, and maybe do some invasive airways if that's contextual to your life. And before all you medical people are like, whoa, the only trained people, fuck yourself. You got trained how to do it. Other people get trained how to do it at the end. Right? Learn how to do maybe some invasive airways. Crikes are very beneficial. NPAs might be beneficial, or nasal pharyngeal airways. Those might be important as well. Right? OPAs, no thanks. Going intubating somebody, definitely not something that I'm concerned about doing. So I don't really care about that aspect. But crikes, I think, are important, and NPA is relatively important, and maintaining someone's open airway is important, and knowing how to make that happen is probably going to be more important in the civilian context of things than catastrophic hemorrhage, because airway compromise is more common than catastrophic hemorrhage in the variety of normal people freaking incidents, you know. Depending on the context, however, of what you do, if you might experience more catastrophic hemorrhage, then yes, wound packing. Wound packing critically important.
I can say, like, contextually, right, you're working at a restaurant, right? You're a waiter or whatever. I would probably lean more towards the airways and that kind of thing versus...
And doing good chest compressions.
Yeah, and good chest compressions.
And knowing how the AED works.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, you're working in a machine shop or some kind of, car shop. That would lead more towards...
Large moving machinery and sharp
objects. Large moving machinery, yeah. That would lead more towards the wound packing, the tourniquet usage, although it's not all about tourniquets. That would lead more towards the wound packing, kind of catastrophic hemorrhage side of things.
And so both of those things are kind of interchangeable based on the context, right?
Yeah.
And then after that, that's when you want to start looking at all the other stuff. Like, now you're just contextualizing what else might be important. Like, I know people who carry tourniquets don't know how to do chest compressions or have never practiced with an AED. You're like, dude, you're more likely to need an AED or do chest compressions on someone than you are to slap a tourniquet on them.
Yeah. And just to kind of further, what we were both saying is it's all contextual. I don't carry the same kit to school that I carry hiking.
Right.
It's different shit. You just have to, broaden that into your own life. You don't carry the same thing that you, do to church that you do to your job. Mm. It's different shit. Contextualize it to your life and carry what's important to you in that context.
Now, I would agree that kits are different contextually. However, one thing we've always done with our kits is have a baseline of equipment.
Well, yeah, there was always those
five common items, which are tourniquet, bandage, gauze, tape, and what's the other one? Chest seal, right? There's always those five base items that are in every single kit, and then everything else is contextual, right? Like gloves. I don't really care about carrying gloves in a kit that's really just made for me and my family. Like, my ankle kit is made for me and my family. I do carry a pair of gloves in there because it is something I carry around with me all the time. So if I happen to be helping someone else and I need some gloves, I like to carry a set of gloves. But if I was going to remove something from that kit because of size or whatever, I would remove the gloves.
Yeah.
If they weren't easy to roll up tiny and stuff in a pocket, a little empty space that already exists in the kit. If I had to make room for them, I wouldn't carry them. And I know a lot of people are like, no way, gloves all the time, especially a lot of the professional responders that I know and who, some of them work for us are like, no way, dude, I carry tons of gloves, because they're thinking in their head, like, I'm going to be helping all these people because professionally that's what they do. They help all these random strangers. I don't. I choose who I help. And if you're fucking gross, I'm going to help you. your problem's not my problem. That's why it's called your problem. You know? So I may not want to jump in there. And if I'm like, oh, this is disgusting, I don't want to get elbow deep in that. Just remember, gloves only go to my wrist, dude. You know what I mean? If I got to get in there, really get in there and get covered in someone else's blood, dude, at any point in time, I have open cuts and slices and all kinds of things on my hand because I work my hands all the time. You know, if I was in an office and my hands were always nice and healed up and, you know, whatever, that would be a different story. Maybe I wouldn't be as concerned about getting someone else's stuff in my blood. But, like, I understand enough about bloodborne pathogens to know that they're not everywhere all the time and my likelihood of getting one is not that high. But it's high enough that what happens if I get a bloodborne pathogen with most bloodborne pathogens is I am now more susceptible to give it to my friends and my family and my loved ones with some of them. I don't want to do that. So because of that, I don't want to deal with it, right? I don't want them to then get something if they have to help me out or there's a blood thing or whatever. I just don't want to deal with it. I don't want to deal with some life-altering freaking disease, you know, because I wanted to get elbow deep in someone I didn't even know. That's my own personal choice. That everyone else can do their thing,
yeah.
Right? So, like, to me, gloves are an item in a kit. I'm like, whatever. Maybe. So you ask, like, is this more about the gear, more about the concepts? Right now it's more about the concepts because if you understand the concepts, then it'll change the way you carry the gear.
Yeah.
Right? Like my pocket kit, which I'll pull out here and talk about. So in my pocket kit, which is not about the size of a big wallet maybe, I got a chest seal, tape, gauze, and a bandage. That's it. Just a small little kit, nothing special. Relatively inexpensive. There's probably, I don't know, less than $20 worth of stuff in this kit.
I was going to say tops 15 bucks.
Yeah, definitely less than $20. These stupid bandages are more expensive than you might think they are. They're more expensive than an Israeli. It's retarded.
Really?
The H&H compression bandages are badass, but the mini compressions are awesome. They're like fucking $8.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's like really expensive for that bandage. It's like one of the most expensive things in the whole kit is the bandage. But even those other stuff in there is better. But like, this is not a big kit, but it's pretty much going to get me to where I need to be for a larger kit,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, to get me to that next level of care. And it's something that's easy for me to carry.
Yeah, I mean, I've got
jamming
my purse.
A tourniquet in there? No.
I've got my little purse one.
Yeah, you got your purse kit. And that's more like a full IFAC because it's in your purse.
Yeah. It's still just as big as that.
It is. It is as big as that. And yeah. It's got some different components. So, like, right here in my laptop case, right, so the front pocket's all my med supplies.
Yeah.
And so I am going to carry a tourniquet in my laptop case because it's a bag. Drew carries a tourniquet in her purse.
There's two of them
there's
in there.
Technically two in there because it's a bag, yeah. Right? So because it's a bag, it's fine to carry. I'm more willing to put a tourniquet in it.
On that note, real quick, I've had arguments with some of my other friends who are, you know, willing to actually put themselves out there and carry shit.
Yeah.
That you need a kit. Right? Yeah. You need some kind of big tactical looking, Molly on the side. You need something to carry it in, right?
Yeah.
It's not true. You can take a chest seal and a compressed H&H mini, right? Yeah. Yeah, one, I've got some in Ziploc bags.
That's what my hiking pack is in.
Yeah.
This is literally just a
vacuum sealed bag, is what Drew's carrying.
It's got four pressure bandages, quick clot gauze.
Four inch.
It's got that TK4 tourniquet seal.
Which is not a tourniquet.
Well, according to this, it is.
It's not.
So it says seals, nitrile gloves, and then tape.
Yeah. It's a basic, like, I would call TK4. The old TK4s were some of the original tourniquet devices. Or I would really look at it more as like a bleeding control device.
Yeah.
You know, you can straight up shut down bleeding with it.
I think this would be more effective for little people.
It's better for kids and it's better for animals. Yeah. And it's not particularly well for adults.
Which is why I also carry a cat.
Carry a full-size cat.
And shears. Mm.
And so, like, those types of kits, or like Garrett mentioned, most of the kits he's built has been, like, him in my office going, like, I want this, this, and this, and this. And I'm like, okay, right. Well, I'm not going to put it in a giant, heavy,
you
expensive,
don't need
whatever,
a giant
pals
thinking, yeah,
military
pals
kit.
Military, here's a, tactical
here's a freezer
kit.
Ziploc bag kit.
Yeah.
Ziploc bag, or like in your laptop case, right?
Yeah.
You just throw it in the front zipper
it's
bag.
It's right here in the front zippered area where all my components are just right here in the front zippered area. Yeah. They're just loose in there, which is fine.
That's how I've got it,
contained.
Like, in my baseball bag, right? Just stuff thrown in there. Not disorganized stuff thrown in there.
But they're all contained in an area.
It's contained in an area, but you don't need some giant freaking kit. That's just, in my experience, that's an argument that I've gotten into with a couple of my friends.
I mean, my running kit, it's all loose in my kit bag.
Yeah.
And then the one in my camel pack for hiking, it's rubber band together.
Rubber bands are awesome.
Like, literally, it's got three rubber bands around it, and it's just together.
Because all we're trying to do is just keep it contained in one area so it's easy to access.
Yeah. We don't need super
doesn't have
cool.
to be in a pouch.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're spending money on the pouch, remember, that's extra money and weight and space that could be put toward more medical supplies or a slimmer kit as opposed to having something giant in a pouch.
And it's also one of those things. Are you just trying to do this to look cool and impress people? Or is this something that you're actually utilizing?
Something more functional.
Yeah. Function over fashion, right? Where a lot of it, it's just glorified right now, where you got to be cool. If you shoot guns, you got to carry a med kit, but 90% of the people don't even know how to use that stuff in there.
Well, so there's the issue with the tourniquet, right, is it's become very tactical.
Yeah.
And now you've got, you know, you look at the new Call of Duty and everyone on there is carrying a tourniquet.
Try playing Call of Duty with this guy.
An improperly staged tourniquet.
Every imperfection in their kit. I mean, it's just...
What is that? What is this? Oh, shit. But all these freaking improperly freaking... stage tourniquets, but you look at that, and that then puts something in someone's mind where they're like, oh, I want to put that on my kit too. Oh,
today,
I got to get a tourniquet. I got to put that on my kit.
This weekend, we fixed an improperly placed tourniquet, remember?
Staged, yes.
Staged.
Placed and properly staged. Yeah. And that wasn't, in that case, it wasn't even improperly staged with bad medical application. It was improperly staged from the aspect of a safety concern.
Correct.
Yeah. But so, and the good thing about that student is
he's an awesome student.
100% willing to do what we tell him to do, so to speak, because we tell him the reason it makes sense to him and he goes
like,
with
cool.
it. Yeah,
like
he's like, oh, that totally makes sense.
You changed it and he asked why. You told him and he goes, that makes perfect sense. Yep. And then that was that. It was done.
So I think
the security strap or whatever.
No,
he had it
around.
Open. He had the windlass out right next to his trigger guard.
Gotcha.
You know, where he was slinging his gun. So one of the things too is just getting professional training with this stuff. Look, there's there's some great organizations out there. Of course, we would love for you guys to come train with us. That would be awesome. We know that that's not possible for everybody. So there are some other great organizations out there, right? A couple that come to mind for medical specific stuff, and some people mix the medical shit in, but for like some specific medical stuff, Kerry Davis and his crew over at Dark Angel Medical are awesome. Caleb Kazi over at Lone Star Medical is awesome, right? Those are two organizations. They travel quite a bit. Caleb's out of Texas. Dark Angel guy, I want to say Georgia, I might be off. I think that.
That sounds right.
I might be wrong. Anyway, look them up. They travel around a lot. There's some other good organizations too. We've had some of them on the show. Triad Medical. Prepared Medical.
Florida.
Yeah. Prepared is out of...
Triad's out of Florida.
Yeah. Prepared's... Oh, shit. Kevin, are you listening? Where the fuck are you? Where do you live, Kevin? Are you listening to the show right now? Anyways, Prepared Med, look them up. Prepared Medical Response. Like I said, Triad, Dark Angel, Lone Star. There's others that just escaped my mind when I got to call them up real quick. But look at these great organizations that are out there doing good things. Make sure that they're well vetted and they know current techniques. Like the way we were teaching how to put tourniquets on 5 years ago is not the way we're teaching to put them on now. And so that's a huge problem. Like, oh, God, it's just such a pet peeve of mine with so many things in training is some freaking instructor is like, no shit, there I was. Check out this fucking resume. And you're like, cool, man. What have you done since then?
Mm-hmm.
Other than tell people about how cool you used to be, Uncle Rico, what have you done since then? Have you stayed up on TCCC protocols? Have you stayed up on TECC protocols? Do you actually know what's going on in the medicine in the world you came from? And more importantly, do you know how that medicine is being applied contextually in the search and rescue environments? How it's being applied in the backcountry environments? How it's being applied in hospitals? How it's being applied with fire crews? Do you know how it's being applied with the EMS crews? Do you know how it's being applied with all those different crews within the different counties and cities in where you live? There's literally not one SOP, I swear, that is the same in almost across the board, just in the greater Phoenix area and all the different metropolitan areas that are here, almost no agency has the same shit. Some of them don't even carry the same tools. Some of them don't even carry some of these tools, right? You got to know that stuff. And it kind of goes back to what we started talking about at the beginning of the responsibility of an instructor. Be very, very careful, you guys, about who you get your training from. Are they current and modern? Are they leaning on some old stuff? Because the new TCCC concepts and guidelines are very different than they were even just a couple of years ago, based on how we're changing the way we're applying. We're going back to proximal application.
Yeah,
we're going back to teaching reduction. We're going back to teaching different applications of the tourniquet. Are we still teaching some of the other methods? Yes, but because of data, i.e. dead people or saved people that we've collected, we see the results of how things work or don't work. So things are being changed. If you're not staying up to speed with that, then you're going to end up getting taught the wrong shit, or you're going to end up teaching the wrong shit. So if you're an instructor listening to this, stay up to speed with the freaking concepts and techniques. That's on you. That's a responsibility of an instructor. That's on you. And if you're teaching bad information, that's your fault. And if someone dies on your watch, also your fault.
And to the people that aren't instructors, right, do the same research, right?
Yeah.
Do your own research. I'm not saying, you know, become your own instructor, because it's always good to get a third opinion, or a third person's opinion, you know, that kind of thing. Have someone else tell you what to do, because it helps the learning process, right? The human brain's weird. It helps. But still, do your own research. Figure out if someone tells you something, figure out if it's right or not, right? I mean, I'm on social media. I've seen so many just incorrect things, so many falsehoods about medical, about shooting, about all kinds of things, where I then had to go do my own research, and I don't like getting on, you know, online arguments, because I think they're stupid, so I don't do that, but maybe I'll shoot them, you know, a DM. I'll shoot them just an answer to a question, or just to some kind of falsehood that they were spreading unknowingly. Because that's how it is a lot of the time, is these guys are unknowingly spreading falsehoods. And that is sometimes because of their ignorance, you know, to the facts and to not doing their own research on the information. But still, go out, correct people. Teach yourself.
On that note, you can bring us out to train with you if you want. It's easy to host us, especially for medical stuff. We don't need much. We bring everything we need with us for the most part. You can contact us, info@trainingaz.com. We're happy to give you all the details on how to bring us out to train with you. If you're a host and you host an open enrollment class and hit the student minimum, then you train for free, so that's a benefit. We do all of our private training traveling as well. Remember to follow us on Facebook and Instagram as The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and Red Wire Gear. We're proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Remember to follow and look at the other shows on the network, over 30 shows now, plus all kinds of other services from Heroes Media Group. They do transcription services. They have their own publishing service. They have tons of cool stuff that they're doing in the media world. So make sure you look at the great empire that that Adam Bird has built over at Heroes Media Group. Next week, we're going to be talking about good training, YouTube University, and how to select the right organization for you. Until then, you guys stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.